You're listening to Radio Influence.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome, welcome, welcome to the Monday edition of the Dark to Light podcast with
Blowtorch behind me, Frank, Val, and
Beans. Blowtorch behind you, Frank, Val. That would be your furnace, I'm assuming, correct?
Yes. Sounds like I have a damn blowtorch going off just like 3 feet away from me. But there's no other place I could put this desk, so this is just the way it is.
It's fine. I like it. It's kind of like a nice cozy sound, you know?
Well, I don't have to deal with it in the summertime, at least.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
But so there's, yeah.
You get the nice, cool, damp basement.
Well, I have a dehumidifier down here, but so I make sure I turn that off before broadcast, and then I just have the oscillating fan to... So I've been able to manage it very nicely down here, especially in the dog days of summer, but... In the winter, I just like have to talk in between spurts of this boiler going on.
That's okay. We'll live with it.
Okay, go ahead.
So I'm here. I'm back. This would be day, what?
Four? Five?
Five, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Yes, this is day five of my COVID journey. So I got to tell you, I'm excited that I feel good enough today to sit here and do this with you. It's fantastic.
Happy to have you here. I hope that I didn't let you down on Friday.
It was great. I didn't listen to the entire thing in my, you know, craziness, but I did hear, I'm so glad you talked about the chocolate morsels.
Oh, the M&Ms.
I will never again refer to M&Ms as M&Ms. From now on forth, they will be chocolate morsels.
These morsels.
I love that word when you say it. It's just great. I was sitting at the table and I played it for Will because we were just like literally I had played that for him and it was hysterical. It was really
cool. What did you play for him? The actual VP explaining what they're doing with the candy?
Yeah. So like we had a discussion about this prior to the show.
Uh-huh.
And then when I heard the show and I heard you do the bit, I was like, oh my God. I was like, I have to show this to him. So I was sitting, we were laughing and both of us sick in our sickness were laughing. Best medicine ever. So it was good. It was really good. And so I don't know. I did a whole Telegram post about my 3-day experience with mm-hmm. COVID. The first day was the worst thing I have ever experienced in my entire life. Probably. But after that, like the second day was so much better. It was almost indescribable. Like I was like, oh my gosh, I can't believe how much better I am in 24 hours. And you know how we always say, you know, you don't know if the vaccine made you better than if you would have just fared it alone.
Yes.
Well, I technically don't know if my body would have handled this as well as it did without the early treatment I was taking. But I can tell you from the way I felt Thursday to the way I felt Friday, I just couldn't see that happening without any support.
Right.
So it all went pretty much uphill from there.
So you did what happened? Did you like when did you start throwing the kitchen sink at it on Friday?
On Thursday.
Okay.
On Thursday, and I had been taking the prophylactic dose of ivermectin, but I got to tell you, the reason I got sick is all my own fault. There is no amount of prophylaxis in the world that would have stopped me from getting COVID. I'm just saying. Because my husband was symptomatic and I kissed him.
Damn it. It's that animal magnetism. You just can't stop it.
Yeah, I didn't believe that he had COVID. I was just being, you know, I was being stupid. I don't know what I was thinking. But anyway, there's no amount of prophylaxis.
You weren't thinking.
I wasn't. Somebody was thinking, but it wasn't
Somebody was doing the thinking for you.
It wasn't my brain. That's for damn sure. Anyway.
It was Cupid.
Yeah, it was Cupid. So I was taking the half the 0.2 milligrams per kilogram of ivermectin and doing my religious nasal wash and gargle and all that. And I think I really do think that I would have escaped it without getting it if I hadn't have kissed him. But he's just so beautiful.
These are all great things.
Yeah.
I'm happy that you guys got your, you gave each other natural immunity. Now, yes. That's good.
Yes. And it's crazy the feeling that you get afterwards. Like I was bringing my daughter to school today after she tested negative this morning, and I was bringing her to school, and they were calling a kid down because he was sick and he had COVID. And I, like, my instinct is to, like, you know, hold my breath or shuffle away. And I was like, I don't need to do that.
Yeah. I'll breathe you in if I'd like.
Yes. Yes. So, I mean, the experience was terrible. I don't wish it on anybody. Honestly, it was terrible. I shudder. I'm laughing about it right now because I feel a lot better, but I shudder to think of the people who have suffered through this without any treatment whatsoever or supportive care or help. And sadly, Frank, we just learned right now during the Ron Johnson hearing that's ongoing that Dr. Christina Parks, who we just had on our show, lost her father to COVID on Friday. And it's a terrible story. It's terrible. Like, she was treating him. They were treating him at home. He was, you know, getting all the medicines that he needed. They had an oxygen machine there that, I guess, malfunctioned. And so his oxygen saturation dropped significantly. And they called the paramedics, and the paramedics got him on some oxygen, and everything pretty much stabilized for him, and everything shot back up. But once they brought him to the hospital, he got the standard care that most people in America do, which is no medications that are outside of the strict protocol put down by Dr. Fauci and the NIH. And he sadly passed away. And she is testifying right now, and she was on talking at this march and rally.
I was just going to say, I just saw her yesterday.
And this is after her father had succumbed to COVID. And, you know, she's an amazing woman. And I know that a lot of you have written in saying how amazing you think she is. And she is an amazing woman. So I send my deepest condolences to her family, because this is terrible. And the yesterday watching this, did you watch any of the speeches going on?
I watched almost the whole damn thing.
Did it hit you in the feels the way it did me?
Oh, my God. I wasn't expecting what I got. But it was so well done.
Yeah.
And they had such a great procession of speakers. It's almost, you remember we were talking about Mike Lindell's symposium?
Yep.
How one of the greatest things wrong with it was just the production of the whole thing. This was, what did it amount to? 2 hours?
Yeah, it was about 2 hours, and it was basically a microphone and a podium.
And it was just, once you get past the doctors, obviously Dr. Malone and Dr. McCullough and a few others there, we saw Dr. Parks, but once you get to those who have been hurt,
yeah,
not only those who have seen what they love doing in life having to say goodbye to it, but also those who are parents of teenagers that died. And remember, these are all deaths that people say don't exist.
Yes.
It hurt so much. And I did not expect it to be that emotional.
I sat there and, you know, sitting here, like, basically with COVID as this was going on, and saying, you know, look what we have been through the past 2 years, and all of it could have been avoided. All of it could have been avoided if it were just for some integrity, like Dr. Malone talked about, and seeing all these brave people up there, like, they really are brave, and everybody, like RFK. I mean, talk about if his dad were alive today, what he'd be thinking.
Well, that's the thing. You look at the crazy people who are responding to all this now. Whatever's left of Twitter, Cheryl Hines was trending this morning. So I said, "Oh, I wonder what this is about." I went and I clicked the trending corkboard over there, and it was just a bunch of blue check neckbeard smarmy bastards talking, saying, "Cheryl, somebody tell Cheryl Hines to come collect her crazy husband, who is RFK," and then, you know, making Larry David jokes, saying, "I can see Larry David saying, no, Cheryl, we can't have you back on Curb Your Enthusiasm," because of course Curb Your Enthusiasm is where they bring on heroes like Lieutenant Colonel Vindman now.
Yeah. Who's okay, I guess, with all the stuff going on in Ukraine, but we'll talk about that later.
Yeah. Well, he could have been the defense minister if he had just, you know, he had a couple of job offers he declined, probably because the pay wasn't as good as the U.S. But it was just astonishing to me that people, obviously they didn't watch it, and obviously the cognitive dissonance would disallow them from really processing what was being said and presented, and the people just telling their personal stories there. All these stories, these happenings that we're supposed to pretend don't exist, but they're being so obviously suppressed, which in itself is a crime against humanity.
Yeah.
I mean, you want to talk about it's almost as worse as the rape, to rape somebody and then to stifle them afterwards. I mean, it's almost, it goes hand in glove with the assault itself, to then make sure that nobody ever hears them screaming. It's a horrible thing. And to see people on Twitter or anybody on the outside of this who could not even quietly, away from the supervision of all of their dog walkers on the media or anybody else, just watch 2 hours of real people coming from all different background, political backgrounds, religious backgrounds, everything else that are up there and just talking straight and begging for someone to listen, and for it to be met with anger and ridicule and jokes is I feel really bad. I feel really bad for those people.
It's terrible. And I have a couple of things. Here's a clip from Bobby Kennedy right here that I thought was really something.
We are all from different political orientations, from different political parties, from different assumptions and backgrounds, from different races and creeds and colors. We are here for one reason. We love the United States of America.
He goes on to talk about what's great about America, and that's wonderful, but this is the key of it for me here.
Nobody in history of the planet has ever complied their way out of totalitarian control. Every capitulation is a signal to the oppressors to impose new forms of torment or torture or compliance or obedience. Every time you comply, you get weaker. The hill that you're going to die on is the hill that you're on right now. And they're coming for our children. And every time they push you back, when you say yes, because you think, if I just do this, we can all return to normal. Every time they talk you and fool you into, bullies cannot be appeased. It just encourages them to new forms of torture and torment. Every time you say yes, you're getting pushed back to a weaker position. That's why we need to resist today. You, all of you in the crowd, I thank you. I love you. You came out on this cold, cold day to do your duty for the United States of America. Let's go and fight for freedom. And let's return to our build back for our children, the America that our parents fought and died for. Thank you very much.
I'm glad you brought that up, because that was especially powerful. And I love that he had said nobody has ever complied their way out of a totalitarian situation like this. And I knew he couldn't go too far with that, but to myself in my kitchen while I was putting together a cabinet for my bathroom, I was listening to this, and I said to myself there too, yes, and nobody's ever voted their way out of a totalitarian rule or despotism, as we're talking about right now too. And I'm glad. It was just a very, very well put together day, and all the right things were said.
Yeah. Yeah, and I have a whole bunch of clips that I've lined up, not from there, but just in general to talk about today. But I was wondering if you wanted to hop into the Johnson hearing and see what they're talking about right now.
Yeah, sure.
Let's see.
Thirds to three quarters, depending on the state, was not related to COVID. Actuaries tell us that a 10% rise in all-cause mortality is a once in 200-year disaster. This was a 40% rise. Our public health establishment has no answer for what caused that. The ethical principle of free and informed medical consent, guaranteed by the Nuremberg Code, the Helsinki Declaration, the Belmont Report, commissioned by our own federal government, the common rule in federal law. This basic principle of medical informed consent was abandoned. For example, when vaccine mandates required experimental EUA vaccines.
So on that tip, we're getting somewhere here. Far too late, Frank. Far too late. This came out in the BBC this weekend. Hold on. It did not rise when I clicked it. Here we go. Listen.
I want to focus on some of the data that's coming out because we're told take this vaccine to protect your patients. And if you look at the UK safety agency data, there's some incredible stuff coming out, which shows that if you're double vaccinated and boosted, you're more likely to get infected than vaccinated. There's a study that's just come out of Israel, Gazit et al. They've looked at the vaccines and unvaccinated group, and the vaccinated group are 27 times higher risk of developing symptoms and 8 times higher risk of hospitalization. I don't want to get into the data, but what it's trying to say is this whole premise that take the vaccine, reduce hospitalization, make things safer, is actually nonsense. It's the other way around.
You know, I don't get... It's a very peculiar situation where you have Israel that has become totalitarian in its own right for its own people with the social controls and the lockdowns and the passes and the vaccines. They're on like shot number 5 or 6 right now, and still skyrocketing infection rates of one thing or another with all the stuff that they're pushing on it. But at the same time, this country and the people inside the country are producing some of the most provocative studies that show that the opposite result or draw opposite conclusions contrary to what the country has already embarked on in trying to do with these shots. It's just weird that they've been so stiff with people and how they're allowed to live and what medicines they must take to take part in public life over there in Israel, but at the same time, they are producing some of the most contradictory studies that you can imagine.
And they're releasing them.
Yeah. Well, you'd think that this would not be allowed for release.
You know, it's funny because the United States doesn't release those things, you see.
I know. They're trying to keep them under lock and key for decades.
Right. Right. And so this is starting, like the CDC just came out and said natural immunity was better. And they came out and said it. Fauci, and then I want to get to this article because it's super important. But listen to what Fauci said the other day, just the other day.
What about the next booster shot? For a substantial part of the population, they're now moving into the 5th month of their booster. So does it lose its effectiveness, and how soon should they get another one if that's your advice?
Well, the answer, Margaret, honestly, is that we don't know, because we don't know the durability of protection from the third shot boost.
I'm stopping it, but there's more. But that's it. That's it. Everybody shut off the television. We don't know. We don't know. You're going to take advice about your own body from a man who admits openly they have no idea what's going to happen.
They don't know what they're doing. They're just every time they improvise, their improvising requires you to take a chance with your long-term health
or your life.
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
It's just, holy hell. They're telling you they don't know what's going on. Why are you going to continue to line up outside of a medical clinic for injections then?
That's only the first time that he says he doesn't know in this clip. There are several others, and I want everybody to hear all of them because this is disqualifying. It's disqualifying, like
of an mRNA and the second shot boost of a J&J. Certainly you are going to see the antibody levels go down. That's natural.
It's natural, Frank.
But there's an element of the immune response, B cell memory and T cell responses, where even though you do see a diminution of antibody levels, it is quite conceivable, and I hope it's true, that the third shot boost will give a much greater durability of protection.
I hope it's true, Frank.
We're following that very carefully. And when I say protection, Martha, I mean protection against severe disease. You are going to see breakthrough infections, as we've seen now, even in boosted people. But for the very most part, They're mild or even asymptomatic.
I just hate him.
Yeah. No, there's no, it's pure unadulterated hatred. It's not, oh, this guy's annoying. No, he's a murderer.
He literally is a murderer. Agreed.
And people who support him without questioning, they are aiding and abetting a murderer. They are, we're talking about people who are party to murder.
Yep.
Every time you throw him, every time you throw him a question, whether it be softball or a softball question or one that actually does merit, it merits a good answer and should be held up as some kind of a metric of truth. You know, there are some questions that need to be answered right now. And when you get an unsatisfactory answer, like we just don't know. And when you have somebody say you just don't know, are you really going to allow that person to suggest that we should still keep children in lockdown and we should still keep an elongating booster schedule in people's faces, holding it over their heads, tying it to civil liberties? You're going to allow a person who just said we don't know anything about what we're doing or how it's going to affect us down the road to continue to make advice to give advice about what drugs they should take, but they just allow these people to keep talking.
Yeah, they keep having them on the Sunday shows. They allow them to keep talking. I came across this article at the Washington Compost, Frank. You know how we've heard of people taking the hospitals to court to, you know, get medicine for their families that they refuse to provide, regardless of whatever their status is, whether they're on death's door or if they're, you know, whatever. This one's a little different. And I wanted to note the difference in tone here, which makes me so angry. This article: COVID patient dies at a hospital weeks after his wife sued another to keep him on a ventilator. So Scott Quiner, a Minnesota man whose wife sued over a hospital's plan to take him off a ventilator months after he was diagnosed with COVID-19, died Saturday. He was 55. There is no scorn, shame, anti-vax. He was unvaccinated, but there is no cocky mocking of this man's death in this article, contrary to what you would see if somebody were to be suing for ivermectin and die while in the hospital, right?
Yeah.
It doesn't exist. And what follows that I'm going to read here is probably going to piss you off too. Quiner died at the hospital, at the Houston hospital, where he was flown for care during the legal battle, according to Marjorie Holston, an attorney for the family. He remained on a ventilator at the time, but she declined to identify the facility or provide additional details on the circumstances of his death. The family ordeal drew national attention this month as surging coronavirus cases overwhelmed hospitals across the United States. A GoFundMe in support of Quiner gathered tens of thousands of dollars in donations, and his wife told their story in media appearances. So GoFundMe's fine with fundraisers to keep people on ventilators, but when you want to take them off and get them cured, they're censored, canceled, they're scorned, and they're mocked in the media. This woman went on full court press all over the country about this. Quiner was not vaccinated when he contracted the virus on October 30th. He was admitted to the hospital with low oxygen levels. When his condition had not improved about a week later, healthcare workers placed him on a ventilator and transferred him to the ICU at Mercy Hospital. More than 2 months passed. Then on January 11th, doctors told Quiner's wife, Anne, that they wanted to take him off the ventilator. She said she strongly objected as his medical representative. Wait a second. Are you allowed to have those again?
Mm-hmm.
You're allowed to have medical representatives now, Frank. Everybody tell everyone that you know.
That's okay now.
Yeah. A day later, she filed a petition in state court to seek a temporary restraining order to keep the doctors from removing him from the ventilator. And a judge granted her request on January 13th, shortly before the machine was to be turned off. It's unclear why Mercy Hospital wanted to take this step. The system that operates the hospital defended the treatment that Quiner received there. Alina Health will vigorously defend the exceptional evidence-based care provided to our patients. Evidence-based care, guys. Make sure that those words are very clear.
Evidence-based care.
To provided to our patients by our talented and compassionate staff, adding that our deepest condolences go out to his family, friends. His passing marks yet another very sad moment as collectively we continue to face the devastating effects of the pandemic. Jennifer Needle is an associate professor of bioethics at the University of Minnesota. And she says, Frank, that hospitals may take someone off the ventilator after concluding that the patient will not survive and that continued life support is prolonging the person's suffering. It's rare, she said. It's rare, she said, for a hospital to go against the preferences of a patient's advance directive laying out their wishes or those of a surrogate. But it does happen. Needle, who is also professor of pediatrics, emphasized that hospitals do not take such decisions lightly and have standard procedures to bring in multiple opinions. And say that the reason why they probably had to take him off potentially is resource scarcity. The whole article, the next quote, there is such a mistrust now of science that it has unfortunately bled its way into people not trusting medical providers who have historically been one of the most trustworthy professions that there could be.
Yeah, historically, they have had a lot more of an authentic interest in people's requests, in their health, in anything. They have no interest in that anymore. It's about they want people to praise them.
They're like the LGBT preschool teacher, Frank.
Yeah. Yeah.
Who came out and told their preschool kids that they're LGBTQ plus, and they want them to clap for them. That's
please. True. They don't get enough praise in their personal lives. They just want to thank you. Thank you, everybody.
The next paragraph is, some families of coronavirus patients have sought to force hospitals to administer ivermectin, a deworming drug that has not been proved effective against COVID-19, but is promoted by some as a vaccine alternative. Judges have denied and rejected such requests. I just have to tell you that speaking from personal experience, ivermectin works very rapidly, in fact, to cure COVID-19. It works fast, like really fast. I'm telling you because I just experienced it. Like, for example, I woke up on Friday morning and I felt so much better, right? But I was still pretty sick. And it came time to take my ivermectin at around noon or so. And I took it. And within 2 hours, the difference that I felt was like insane. And it wasn't like I was like, ooh, let me wait and see what the ivermectin does. It was like all of a sudden I was markedly better. And I said, well, what the frig changed?
Oh, well, why again, any reason why if administering it at full strength in the middle of your sickness worked so well in cutting down recovery time, why the hell do you think that it didn't work as a preventative? Although it took a long time for you to even have this happen. So I guess that's something.
It didn't work as a preventative because I stuck my tongue into the COVID-infested mouth of a man.
Yeah, that's right. I got you. There's only so much you can do there.
Yeah.
You guys should have been drinking Scope mouthwash before and after.
We were doing it. It's my own fault. I did it to myself, okay? I know exactly what I did to myself. And I debated whether I should even say it. In addition to that, even though I was taking it, I was taking a half of what is used to treat active illness. So I'll just say this. Do you know who tested negative this morning?
Who?
Viviana.
Okay. Well, that's because she already had it too, right?
Nope. Virgin.
Okay. Okay. So she's the only one left.
She's the only one left in the household, in the Beans fam.
Okay.
But there is no prophylactic on the face of the planet that would have stopped me from getting COVID, is what I'm saying.
Got you. Got you.
Yeah. And even after, what did I do that on Monday? I didn't have Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. Yeah, that makes sense. 3 days. Yep. It was actually Thursday night that I, was it Thursday night? Yeah. What was it? Wednesday night. It was like 11 o'clock and I started feeling the tickle. And I was like, oh boy, this can't be good. And I went and I gargled the hell out of myself. And then I took a shower and I woke up the next morning like, okay.
I'm sick.
Yeah.
Well, see, that's why I wake up like every morning now.
I know. That was so funny. Did you give it to me?
to what it was. Every morning I'm like, oh my God, Detrice. We were talking on Skype for like an hour. She was like 3 feet away from me on Skype. I know it.
But it's crazy, isn't it?
Yeah. No. Well, it is crazy. Here's the other thing there too. I normally, this is what I do to myself. I normally go to bed at a point where I am so exhausted that I feel sick. Every night that I go to bed, I never, you know how they say, well, it's not what they say. It's true that whenever you feel that sensation of thirst, the sensation of thirst and needing water usually lags behind your need for water a long time. You should be drinking. It should just be a constant saturation effect that you'd be going for throughout the day.
Yeah, you should never get thirsty.
Yeah, well, and you should also just find a time to go to sleep when you're not overtired. Because then I don't know, there's a whole other kind of hormone release, and then it gets harder and harder to actually fall asleep and stay asleep. But every night now, I usually just go to bed so exhausted that I almost feel slightly nauseous and dizzy. Because I have to get so much done. I want to read a little bit. I want to do this and that. I take my showers at night, whatever. I want to listen to some radio, talk radio, whatever the hell it is. But now, when I go to bed and I feel like this, I have to remind myself, no, you're just overtired. You're not sick. You'll see. And then it adds, it's a little bit more like, oh, man, I hope when I wake up tomorrow, I was just tired and that's all it was.
That's how I've lived my life for the past, 6 months.
I'm sure a lot of people like that.
Yeah. You know, the one thing that I haven't really experienced a lot of yet, but I can tell it's a little bit different. I was never, only one day did I legit have some sort of delirium filled sleep for the entire day. It was the first day.
Fever dreams.
Yeah, it was. It was crazy. I was not fully sleeping, but I was. I can't explain it. The highest my fever went was 103.
And
I suffered it out, Frank. I didn't want to do anything to take it down just because I wanted it to do what it's supposed to do.
Yeah, no. I mean, as shitty as fevers are, I mean, especially once you get close, anywhere near 102, that's when you feel like you have the lead weights on your shoulders.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's just, it really is something else. But at the same time, there is a very, very necessity for those fevers to destroy whatever the hell's going on inside.
Yeah, so I suffered it out, and when I woke up in the morning, my fever was down to 99. So I was like, "All right, good, yeah, I can deal."
When a fever breaks, it's like victory.
It is. It felt like victory. And then the highest I ever got after that was 100, which is nothing. And I'm normal today, so good. But I just I don't remember what I was going to say. Oh, yeah, the tiredness. I haven't had that yet. I haven't had, right now sitting here with you, I'm not getting overly exhausted doing this. Let's see how the rest of my day goes, because I have literally spent the past 5 days. I got up. I walked around. I did some stuff. I washed some dishes. I didn't want to be bedridden the whole time. But
You should try whatchamacallit, crystal meth.
Oh, yeah. Yo, shoot. I have to get some of that Sudafed anyway, so I might as well.
Yeah, I started the last 3 or 4 days. I just started watching Breaking Bad.
Oh, did you? We watched a show. We binge watched a show on Saturday, and we also watched a movie called Don't Look Up. Have you ever seen it?
I've been hearing a lot about it. I haven't. Everybody has an opinion on it, but I've been looking at it. I just watched Yellowstone all the way through. That's amazing. And now I'm starting. Yeah.
What are you doing now?
Well, this is the first time I'm watching Breaking Bad.
Oh, that's what you're... Okay. So I've never seen it either. So Don't Look Up, to me, was just basically watching reality on television in a movie. It was so well done. So well done. And my husband absolutely loved it. He thought it was the best movie. He loved it. I was stunned about that. I didn't think that he would. I know that there are a lot of people, Frank, in our little extravaganza group that are dying for you to see it because they want your opinion on it.
Okay, I'll watch it then.
Yeah, watch it. It's worth it. It's 2 hours and 18 minutes long. Doesn't feel like it.
Okay.
It literally feels like you're watching our life in a movie.
Hey, have you ever watched Burn After Reading?
No.
Oh. This is one of those obscure movies at this point. I don't know. Burn After Reading, you got to watch too, especially since we have followed so much of the shenanigans of FBI, CIA, state State Department, just what goes on. We attribute a lot of scheming and devious behavior to these agencies, and there's plenty on file to prove that that is the case. But this is just one of those films that is just so full of human folly, and it's set to a backdrop of Washington D.C. and there's a lot of great actors in it, John Malkovich and
Did you ever see Being John Malkovich?
Of course. So yeah, so he's in it. Brad Pitt is in it. A whole bunch of others. J.K. Simmons, a few other people, but just because we follow FBI, CIA stuff so much, you got to see it because it shows how doddering they actually are as well, aside from their being so sloppily conniving too. Another one that I think is interesting, even though it really, I think, only tells about maybe one third of the story, is Charlie Wilson's War.
Never.
You ever see that?
Nope.
Oh my gosh. You got to watch Charlie Wilson's War.
You're gonna have
another
to send me a list. I can't. You're gonna have to see. There's so many you're throwing at me here.
Oh yeah, you gotta watch Burn After Reading and Charlie Wilson's War.
Okay, you have to watch. We just saw. It's a Netflix special, and then it's called Midnight Mass. I don't know why my husband wanted to watch this, but it was something.
Okay, so I gotta watch Don't Look Up in Midnight Mass. All right.
Yeah, Midnight Mass was like it's very off. It's like a vampire movie. But it's not really.
Wait, it's a series?
It's a series, yeah.
Oh.
We watched it all in a day. I think it was 6 hours or something. But, you know, when you're sick with COVID, there's nothing else to do. So you sit there and there was no way that I could focus on anything else. I was playing some dumb game on my tablet with like a washcloth on my head, like zombie like watching this show. So there's that.
Okay.
I have other stuff here. What else did I have today to talk about? I do have other things. Oh, Frank, you're going to love this. Thomas Massie introduced a bill today.
Okay.
I'd like to take a moment to read this bill. It might take a little while. Oh, no, it won't. It's one sentence. Ready?
Okay. I like bills that are only one sentence long.
A bill to terminate the Department of Education.
Yes.
Be it enacted by the Senate and House of Representatives of the United States of America in Congress assembled. Section 1, termination of the Department of Education. The Department of Education shall terminate on December 31st, 2022. End of story. Close the book. That's it. That's the bill.
That, and listen, that's as easy as it is, ladies and gentlemen. I even though we know that when given the majorities to do it, the Paul Ryan era Republicans that were passing those ceremonial bills in the House to repeal Obamacare, that was also one sentence long, some of those bills.
Can you?
Obamacare is hereby repealed or whatever.
Mean, very simple. Very simple. Not like 3,000 pages so high that you can't even hold it. You have to see. My gosh. Insane. How many times have the Democrats used the filibuster in the past week?
Well, somebody did the tallying. In recent years, somebody did the tallying that the Democrat Party had used the filibuster well over 120 times. And it just goes to show they have this throw the baby out with the bathwater mentality. And if they don't act now, they feel like they're never going to be able to act again. Mm. So this is why I say I wonder what kind of a doom they feel they're working up against, despite what they've been able to pull off in 2020 as far as taking the White House and working with the media to gaslight the entire country into thinking that we still have elections we can trust. There is an incredible panic in the way that they're operating, in the way that they needed this voting rights bill, which is ridiculous. It's a voter fraud legalization act. So it's curious to me. It really is. And for them to throw away and commit to throwing away something, a measure that has been so well liked by them, and that if they're ever in the minority, they're going to want back. It really makes you think, what the hell are they? I mean, they're insane. It could also just be that there's no sense behind it. But
When your back is up against the wall and you're floundering like they are, it's like all strategy goes out the window. All of it goes out the window. You'll see when you watch Don't Look Up.
Okay.
I mean, I'm telling you, like, I'm watching it. If you just transpose COVID over the comet, and it's like a freaking, it's our life right now in media and those of us who are paying attention. It's like, wow, okay, this is not a movie. And at the end of the day, I can't say anything else. You got to watch it. It's just worth it.
Okay. All right.
Guess what, Frank?
Yes.
Remdesivir is now approved for COVID outpatients too.
I think that we should make remdesivir OTC and put it next to the Tylenol.
You know who will take it?
Everybody. It's so popular and it works very well.
The FDA said the possible side effects include increased levels of liver enzymes, which could be a sign of liver injury, and allergic reactions, which may include changes in blood pressure and heart rate, low blood oxygen level, fever, shortness of breath, wheezing. So all the symptoms of COVID, basically.
So take remdesivir and pretty much drown in your own bodily fluids.
The 3-day course is for COVID outpatients only, as hospital patients, not on blah, blah, blah. Gilead noted in a statement that the safety profile for remdesivir was similar as that of placebo, with the most common treatment-related adverse events being nausea and headache. That is so I have this in my head. Flames!
Burning?
Burning! Flames! I'm going to play it. I'm going to play it. Here it is.
You were jealous that your husband was shopping at that. That's why you killed him, too.
Yes. Yes, I did it. I killed Yvette. I hated her so much. Flames. On the side of my face, heaving breaths.
While we were in the billiards.
See, this is what I'm talking about. People get really upset when they talk about how stand-up comedy is a man's game, and it really is. But you can't take away comedic acting from people like Madeline Kahn, who are breathtakingly funny in everything she's ever done.
I've only ever. What else is she in? I don't even know.
Oh well, she's done so much with Mel Brooks, and a few other. I'm trying to think of some other things there too. But she's just incredibly funny.
If you haven't seen Clue yet, I don't know what the hell you're waiting for. It's one of the best movies. I love it.
Well, it's also relevant now because it's so everybody. You start realizing that everybody in the room has some kind of a deep state, tie-in, and you have the WHO, you have the UN, you have scientists and doctors, and you have scandal and one thing over another. The real overarching theme that communism is nothing but a red herring, which it is. It's just a red herring. It's a nice divisive tool that you give to ideologically, I don't know, corrupted voting bases to argue about, while the real masters of the world don't give a shit who you vote for, what you want. They're just going to keep creeping up on you. It's a great, great, great story.
Did you see a couple of these? I'm going to have to remove this. Here it is. This is what I'm looking for. Let's jump. I'm going to jump back into the hearing before I talk about the next thing. Hold on here.
And also from my constituents have asked me the same question. So we'll start there. But I really encourage all of you, if there's an important point that we're missing, that is allied with a particular subject. But what I want to do is I want to try and group these things together. So
can we just say God bless Ron Johnson?
Talking about early treatment in one hand, then hospital treatment. I'm going to go through this in an organized fashion based on Dr. McCulloch's four pillars. So we'll start with the limiting spread, but just kind of the basics of the virus, what we know. But again, I want you to hop in.
I'm stopping it. I'll put the link to this because Del Bigtree's The High Wire is broadcasting this right now.
Uh-huh.
And also I want to say Wednesday. So I had a meeting on Thursday, Frank, with attorney Aaron Seary, who is the attorney behind the San Diego school board's mass vaccination lawsuit, stopping that, and also the FDA release of the safety data from Pfizer, that FOIA lawsuit. Finally, we got together and we will be interviewing him on Wednesday, Frank.
Okay.
So if you have a couple of days, he has a blog, I mean, a Substack that I'll send you. He doesn't really do very many interviews at all, but I really want him on to talk about his past, what he's done in the past. I mean, this is not a new thing for him. He's done some amazing things and he's a brilliant attorney, like brilliant. So he'll be on with us on Wednesday. And I wanted to say that Ron Johnson, very early on, I guess it was March of 2020, his staff reached out once we published the column about influenza-like illness in the United States earlier than they were saying. And his staff spent time with me and spent time with a gentleman who helped us to put the data into tables and stuff, and learned everything about where we pulled our information from, and asked dozens and dozens of very carefully, you know, thought out questions, and cared very much about what we had found. Mm-hmm. From day one, Senator Ron Johnson has been on top of this and has given a crap about it. And it just shows today, he's probably one of the most informed senators on COVID outside of, you know, because everybody's still saying, oh, you should go get the vaccine. You know what I mean? Like most of them, he's having vaccine injured people come and talk to everyone.
Yeah. And remember, only a couple of in years past, for providing the public with testimony, only a few people that would have been injured in this way would have been enough to put a pause to the whole thing.
Yeah.
Okay. So, I mean, anything, the information collected, the anecdotes collected on yesterday's rally alone in DC would have been enough in prior years to pause everything and to reassess what's going on. But it's...
doesn't happen anymore.
Yeah, no. No, it's just a reminder that there's something else happening.
You know, I got a text. We're going to end in a second because now I'm getting tired, believe it or not. But I got a text from a dear, dear friend of mine with a song that is, I think it's the theme song to the third Plandemic movie also. I'm just going to play it. I wonder if we'll get in trouble. Because I love this song. This song like hits me in the feels. Did you ever hear it?
Yeah. Oh no, it's the first time I'm hearing it.
Ugh. It's so good. You need to find it. It's called This Is a War by Hi-Rez and Jimmy Levy.
You know, a lot of the folk songs I heard yesterday, I don't gravitate to stuff like that. But when I was listening to it, I was like, you know, this is the reason why this music existed.
Yeah.
I mean, this is just another form of expression and they're telling a real story. I wouldn't, you know, put it on in my car and rock to it. But I understand it as a vehicle to deliver a message now, more than ever.
I feel like before we end, honestly, I really do feel like something's changing. And it's not just the established narrative. It's the people. I mean, there were people from every different political persuasion at that thing yesterday. That is the antithesis of what the, quote, power brokers want to happen. Republicans and Democrats getting together to rally on D.C.?
Yep.
Not what they want. All right, well, I'm done. How about you? You done?
I'm fine. You go rest up. It's great to hear you again.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for taking the show on Friday. You have been listening to the Dark to Light podcast with...
Blowtorch Val and...
Got Over COVID Beans. You can hear us every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 2:30 Eastern Time on TuneIn, Stitcher, Apple, iTunes, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and RadioInfluence.com. We'll be back on Wednesday with attorney Aaron Seary.
Later.
I'm Jerry P. Tuck, CEO of Radio Influence. I just wanted to take a quick moment to say thank you for downloading and subscribing to this podcast. There are a lot of people behind the scenes here at Radio Influence that work hard to keep you entertained day in and day out. If you'd like to get involved and advertise on this program, or you have some show ideas that you'd like to see us add to the Radio Influence family, please email us at contact@radioinfluence.com. We all have crazy schedules, so the fact that you took time out of your busy day to let us entertain you for a while means a lot. Without you, the listeners, we wouldn't exist, so thank you again for downloading and subscribing to this show. Don't forget to check out radioinfluence.com to see what other shows we also have to offer. All of Radio Influence's programming can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and of course, radioinfluence.com.